It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in on Wisconsin's live theater scene as the winter season is upon us. It's new works taking the stage and beloved Broadway productions set to come here. Call in with a question. You can share your comments on live theater and the arts, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Gwen Rice is here, professional writer and playwright. Gwen, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, fittingly, we're going to start with Halloween on the mind. And opening this weekend is Night of the Living Opera, an operatic adaptation of the classic horror film Night of the Living Dead. This is Milwaukee Opera Theater. What can we expect from this production?
You can expect the unexpected. I actually saw a workshop of this production last year at this time when they were really just trying to get it up on its feet and, try out some of the puppetry that they have. They're actually working with Angry Young Men Puppet Theater to bring some of these zombies to life in the theater space. And at that time, they only had two instruments in the ensemble. This time they've pulled out all the stops. They have a six-person musical ensemble and more puppet zombies in one place than you've probably ever seen.
And I think it's Milwaukee produced puppets as well. They're keeping it local.
Yeah, actually the entire design team and writers and composers, they all have strong local connections. And this is the sort of thing that Milwaukee Opera Theater really excels at. They take modern or unusual subject material, and then they transform it into some stunning modern opera. And I'm not a big fan of horror movies, but I was really sort of enthralled by the reading last year. I'm sure that the full production is going to be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, opera mingling with zombies. I'm just under, is that a good pairing? Can they pull that off?
I mean, I think it is. In opera, you get a lot of really heightened emotion.
Yes.
A lot of crazy things happen in traditional operas, murders and suicides and all sorts of, transpiring
plans. Point taken,
daring do. So if you know anything about the Night of the Living Dead, it's kind of an interesting sort of cultural touchstone. It sort of started the whole genre of horror movies, modern horror movies, and it was really all about the sort of dread of things changing, when it came out, I believe in the 50s. So it's actually a really interesting piece to go back and revisit with a different medium.
Okay, so another spooky season show is Witch, the dark comedy by playwright Jen Silverman. What stands out to you in this take on the Salem witch trials?
Well, this is Renaissance Theater Works, and they typically look for pieces that speak specifically to women's stories. And this is actually a retelling of a Jacobean drama, but obviously set in a very modern time period, very modern language. And it's all about the day that the devil comes to this little town in Scotland and tries to buy off the townspeople's souls in exchange for, their wish, their desire. A lot of times it's power or it's revenge. And the devil gets stuck when he tries to convince this sort of lone fallen woman, who everyone believes is a witch. He tries to convince her to sell her soul and get something, spectacular in return. And she holds out. It sort of flips the script on, the whole town is in league with the devil, except the one who everyone assumes is a witch.
And from what I understand, Jen Silverman writes about women prominently in her works.
She's a really stunning queer playwright. She takes on a lot of very traditional pieces and tries to turn them on their head. it's really refreshing. Her work is really unlike anything else that's going on right now. It's very smart. She wrote a play that that American Players Theater did last season called The Moors, which was sort of a satire on the Jane Eyre, English romance, with the bad boy and all that sort of thing. And it was very funny, very very unexpected. But yeah, she's becoming more and more popular just because what she has to say is so sort of piercing and unique, and very, very smart.
We're talking about the upcoming theater season in Wisconsin, getting a preview with playwright and theater critic Gwen Rice. You can join in with your questions and your thoughts, experiences, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Gwen, starting November 17th, the one-man show Liberace focuses on the Milwaukee native and icon. How is Liberace's legacy captured by this show?
This is a charming one-person show. It actually debuted several years ago at the Milwaukee Rep. Now Milwaukee Chamber Theater is remounting it. It was actually written and is being directed by Milwaukee Chamber Theater Artistic Director Brent Hazelton. And it's really just one fantastic actor at a piano. Playing, obviously, tremendous piano pieces and singing and telling stories. And so the whole show really hangs on the sort of charisma and flamboyance and also just amazing musical talent of the actor portraying Liberace. And from what I hear, Brett Rybak is more than up to the task. And it should be just a really fun evening with a performer who's known for his sort of outlandish showmanship.
Well,
and his, of course, musical talent.
We're gonna just get a taste of this. This is Liberace introducing one of his songs, Chopsticks.
I'd like to return to the classics, perhaps the most famous classic in all the world of music. And yet, for some strange reason, I've been told that I'm the only pianist to ever play this number in Carnegie Hall.
That audio is courtesy of the LibFac YouTube channel featuring clips from Liberace performances. You know, Gwen, how well is Liberace remembered outside of his hometown of Milwaukee?
You know, it's hard for me to say, but I feel like he's much more than, a Wisconsin figure. And he's certainly a very unusual representative of, the Badger State. I think his legacy is much, much bigger than that. You know, he was such a sort of wacky, smart, incredibly talented, but also just incredibly eccentric, sort of flamboyant character. And he delighted people with his entertainment, just, I think, throughout the country, around the world. I mean, he's one of those, single word names, right? Mm-hmm, you've got Cher and Madonna and Liberace. Everybody knows who you're talking about. They immediately think of, the costumes and the, like you said, the showmanship. So I think he's much more than the, local kid done good. He's kind of a legend.
We explore the fall winter theater season across the state. Playwright and theater critic Gwen Rice leading the way. You can be part of the discussion at any point. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts. 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're on a tour of plays and musicals as the holiday season of live theater gets underway across Wisconsin. Gwen Rice is a playwright and theater reviewer. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. You can share your perspectives. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, Gwen, we're turning to the holiday favorites here. Madison's Overture Center and Milwaukee's Pabst Theater will host productions of A Christmas Carol. How will the two productions differ?
Well, the Children's Theater of Madison has had a long tradition of presenting A Christmas Carol as their annual holiday show. And last season, they decided to change things up a little bit by commissioning a new adaptation by Charlotte Martin. And in this new version, obviously all of your, you know, all the favorites are there, Scrooge and Tiny Tim and, you know, the ghosts of Christmas Past, et cetera. But they also incorporated some characters from another Charles Dickens short story. They're the lamplighters. And so these were literally the people who used to work throughout London lighting the lamps so that, you know, everyone could go about their days and, you know, be able to see what they were doing. And it's a big theme in the new adaptation, just this idea of light in the darkness and the sort of magic behind the scenes that happens. So, it like I said, it debuted last year and to great acclaim. And then they're doing it again this year. There have been a few cuts and, you know, some fine tuning done. But LaShawn Banks is coming back as Ebenezer Scrooge. It's being directed by Brian Cowing, who directed the show last year. So I think that should be a really fun sort of new take on a beloved classic.
I think that's interesting because we're getting more complexity with characters there. And it sounds like, you know, theaters are taking a bit more liberty with A Christmas Carol, with the story.
Well, you know, it is the holiday show. And in many cases, it's the holiday show that theaters depend on to fund the rest of their seasons because it is such a classic. You know, it's so well known and it's sort of a family favorite. And I think it's exciting, actually. There have been one person, you know, Christmas carols, you know, really stripped down to the basics. Some productions go all out, and that's very much like the one that the Milwaukee Rep is presenting at the Pabst. They also have the tradition of doing A Christmas Carol every year. I actually remember going to see that production or a production that the Milwaukee Rep did when I was a teenager. So a really well-loved production. And they're all about really just going to the max with, you know, just the most beautiful costumes, lovely music, you know, a lot of stage magic. I saw it again just a couple of years ago, and, you know, not to spoil anything, but at the performance I attended, at the end of the show, they actually made it snow in the theater.
Well, here's the first scene of A Christmas Carol performed by the Gateway Center in New York.
Mr. Scrooge, my wife has died. I need to pay her funeral expenses and
what, Mr. Smythe?
Sir, I need more time to pay you.
Am I a charity? Am I the state? Your mortgage is due the 25th of every month tomorrow, 9 a.m.
Please, sir, what about my children?
Scrooge says pay, sir.
Christmas Day, sir.
You'll learn soon enough, child, that Christmas is a humbug.
I think we're all mouthing the lines. You know, Gwen, I'm a product of A Christmas Carol that staged at the Guthrie Theater in Minneapolis, and I just looked it up. It's been running basically almost as long as I've been alive. You know, why is it such a staple, and how would you convince someone to see a live performance when the story is so familiar?
Well, I mean, my first statement has to be there's nothing like live theater. I mean, you cannot have the same experience watching it on a screen, you know, going back to see an old movie, even, you know, reading it yourself. There's something truly magical about being in the same room with an entire group of people in the audience and then knowing that literally anything can happen next. I mean, that is the thing about live theater that is different from any other version, you know, of the story is you just never know when something could go wrong, something could go completely right. It's a singular experience. It will never be recreated. That moment when all of those people, you know, laughed uproariously or sighed or, you know, it's just transformative. And that is why I do what I do, because I think theater is the single greatest communication tool in the world.
Yeah, I think that's a mic drop there, right? Gwen Rice with us as we talk about the fall and winter theater season, upcoming holiday productions in Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions and comments and your remembrances of live theater. 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. So then enter Scrooge from November 2nd to December 23rd, Fireside Dinner Theater in Fort Atkinson, presenting Scrooge the musical. And the Broadway show is based on the musical movie starring Albert Finney. Let's take a listen. So that recording is from the 1970s film. What is theater performed in the round like, especially for Scrooge the musical at the Fireside Dinner Theater?
Well, the Fireside has been presenting big musicals in the round for decades. And I would say there's nobody who does it better. It's actually a very small square stage, and it's surrounded on all four sides by audience. And then there's also a balcony. And the sort of magical thing about theater in the round is that you don't need, you know, all of the huge sets and, you know, props and furniture and that sort of thing. It really is about a more immersive experience where the action is really focused on the actors. Mm. And it's amazing, the sort of, you know, dance numbers and the things that they can evoke, using, like I said, just the smallest amount of scenery, and then actors who are literally performing on all sides at all times. But they get great talent in, and so voices are always tremendous. They do a really nice job.
And for the latter half of December, It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play, will be performed at Third Avenue Playworks in Sturgeon Bay. So performed as a radio play, what can we expect here?
This is really fun. So as much as I love theater, watching It's a Wonderful Life, the old Jimmy Stewart classic, is one of my holiday traditions. And I love the fact that it's translated into this 1940s radio show. So what the audience is seeing is actors in the 40s coming to a radio studio and then performing a play version, a radio play version of the story of It's a Wonderful Life. And what you're also seeing is the Foley artist, so the person who's doing all the sound effects that make the story sort of come to life. So you get to see them, you know, shaking the bells, you know, for a sound effect, or, you know, putting little shoes across a table, you know, to make it sound like someone's walking towards you. All of those great old live sound effects are being done in front of you. And so it's sort of taking the curtain back from your medium, radio, and allowing people to see how some of the magic is made. It's a lovely show.
Do you think when our audience is nostalgic for a live 1940s radio broadcast, what does that kindle?
I think we have access to so much media now that there is a little bit of a nostalgia to, you know, a time when, you know, the closest you could get to sort of a spectacle was listening to a story being told, you know, in your living room and having to fill in a lot of the blanks in your head with you know, great voice actors and, like you said, these great sound effects. So,
And it's kind of why we really gravitate to podcasts now, maybe, as well. I mean, that might have an influence.
There's definitely an art to listening that I think people have rediscovered, and whether it's because they can do it at the same time they go for their walk, you know, or while they're doing, you know, work around the house or whatever. I think that is one really great thing, actually, about radio today, is that it gives people an opportunity to really immerse themselves in a story, but also do some of the work themselves in their own imaginations.
Theater critic and playwright Gwen Rice giving us a sampling of upcoming live theater performances around the state. You can call in with a question, share your views, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As the holiday season approaches, we explore live theater productions and Broadway shows with runs on Wisconsin stages. Playwright and theater critic Gwen Rice has ideas for what to check out, and you can highlight your favorite live theater works. Be part of the discussion at any point. You can ask a question, call in at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Okay, Gwen, we'll flip the calendar over to December, and from the 7th to the 17th, All Is Calm, The Christmas Truce of 1914, that will be staged by Four Seasons Theater in the Playhouse at Madison's Overture Center. And you've described this play as achingly beautiful. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's a very different kind of holiday sort of spectacle, in that it's the story is taken from, you know, letters and stories and historical moments during World War One. So there's a famous true story that on Christmas in 1914, German soldiers and English soldiers actually came out of their bunkers and declared their own sort of holiday truce and played soccer together and exchanged gifts and drank together and sang songs together and celebrated Christmas before they went back into the trenches the next day and sort of resumed this miserable war. And so that is one of the main events that's portrayed during the show, which also has a lot of songs that were very popular, you know, trying to rally the troops, you know, and you know, some sort of like little propaganda songs as World War One began. And then just lots of moments from the war that were obviously harrowing and heartbreaking. But it's all men, and it's a beautiful chorus. This is actually, I believe, the third or fourth year that Four Seasons is doing this particular show. The first time they did it, it was so striking, I think, to the audiences and so popular that it sold out. And so it's become kind of a tradition for them to do something that's very much rooted in, you know, the ideas of Christmas, obviously, but from a very, very different perspective. And as I said, the music is just extraordinary.
I wonder, from your perspective, in as a playwright, you know, when you see a play like this weaving together the World War One documents and the diaries and letters written by soldiers, what do you think of that, like, scrapbook approach to playwriting?
Well, I think it can be really helpful, you know, particularly for a show like this, which wants to, you know, tell a broad story. Obviously, you know, the war was such an enormous just cavalcade of stories from every individual soldier. And also, you know, really wanting to highlight a whole catalog of music that was created because of this event. I think it's really nice, instead of sort of manufacturing, you know, a story that maybe we've heard before, to just go back to the original sources and really get to hear the voices of some of the young men who were there. I think it just has a whole different tone when you can, you know, like you said, pick up a few sentences from a letter that someone actually wrote back to their family, talking about, you know, the horrible conditions that they were enduring and fighting in France.
Why do you think the play connects with this theater group, Four Seasons Theater?
Well, Four Seasons is all about big musicals,
okay.
And they're also really about musicianship. And this is, I think, one of the pieces where they strike just a beautiful balance between making a lot of really stunning visual pictures on stage, but really letting the play be a celebration of just some gorgeous harmonies between the four vocal parts, an all-male chorus, and sort of bringing back music that may be a bit familiar. Mm-hmm. You know, again, it's a little bit of that nostalgia, I guess, but just sort of immersing yourself in a Christmas that in very, very different circumstances, I think also just gives us pause. And it's really beautiful. It will probably make you cry.
There point. She says it again. So Gwen, I'd like to pull back for a moment. How are Wisconsin theater organizations faring financially? How are they doing at this point?
Well, there is this is a hard time for theaters in Wisconsin, but actually nationwide. Obviously, during the pandemic, theaters were closed, you know, mm-hmm. for a year or 18 months because everyone was sheltering in place. And then after those restrictions were lifted, people didn't return to going to the theater regularly like they did before. Mm-hmm. And this is something you can see across a lot of the performing arts, symphonies, operas, but particularly theater. And so a lot of season subscriptions are down dramatically. And even single tickets are down dramatically. People just haven't quite gotten back into the habit of going to the theater. And it's a crisis for a lot of theaters, a lot of regional theaters in the country. Some pretty well-known theaters are actually just taking the year off. They're going on a sabbatical, mm-hmm. trying to figure out how to program and sell tickets to maybe a post-pandemic audience. So it's, you know, running a nonprofit theater has always been challenging, mm-hmm. in the best
yes.
of times.
Sure.
Right now, it's even more challenging. There was some government funding during the pandemic to help, you know, the organizations get through that crisis. But now that's gone. Mm. And, you know, with lower ticket sales also comes lower donations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as a theater lover, down to my core, I guess I would encourage everyone to just go to the theater, get butts in seats this holiday season. It's an amazing experience to have with your family. You know, the theaters miss you. And I think, you know, we all need that sense of connection and inspiration and that hope and artistry that theater can provide.
Mm.
So I would encourage everyone to, you know, support your local theater and get back into the habit.
That is playwright and theater critic Gwen Rice with us as we tour through the fall and winter theater season lineup. You can join in with your questions and your comments, 800-642-1234. Joe is here from Hillsboro. Joe, hi.
Hi, great show, and I'm just loving this. As parents, we took our kids to Viterbo University. They do children's programs there, plays with the McDonald's series, and they were just wonderful, well-produced. The kids just love them, and now as adults, our kids love going to the theater, love going to plays, and when we traveled together, one of our missions wherever we go is to try to seek out a play or a theater that we can visit. And then that kind of ingrains that trip into our heads. We always think of, oh, remember when we were in the Black Hills of South Dakota, we went to the theater in the woods and we saw Pirates of Penzance. Mm-hmm. And it brings back that experience. And it's just wonderful. And I would just encourage parents to take their kids to the theater, because there's just to plays and just experience it, and it'll make such an impact on them. So,
oh, Joe, thank you for that heartfelt story. Gwen, what comes up for you?
Well, you know, as he mentioned, there's nothing like, you know, being a kid and coming into, you know, a big, beautiful old theater like the Oscar Mayer, or like, you know, a lot of historic theaters in Wisconsin, and then really being transported by what you see on stage. It's a magical thing. And I remember very vividly the first few professional plays that my parents took me to. And it was like something awakened in me. and I love that tradition of going new places and seeking out the local theater just to see what it is, you know. Not every town or city is lucky enough as Madison or Milwaukee to have many, many, you know, professional options to choose from. But that doesn't mean that you won't have amazing experiences wherever you go. So, yeah, I love that idea. And I have to say, I've been taking my son, Charlie, to the theater ever since he was a little kid. He doesn't love it like I wish he would. And I think that's just the curse of children and parents, you know, the one thing that you really want to share and they're interested in something else. But I finally took him to the Broadway touring musical Six.
Uh-huh.
When it came to Overture this fall.
Yep.
And for the first time, he's 14, for the first time, he turned to me at intermission and said, "Wow, Mom, I really love this."
Oh, wow.
I was like, oh, it's all paid off.
That went straight to your heart. Gwen Rice is a professional writer and playwright as we check out the fall-winter season of live theater in Wisconsin. You can join the conversation, ask a question, share your perspective along the way. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As theater companies around Wisconsin prepare to stage their winter seasons, we get a preview of the offerings with playwright and theater critic Gwen Rice. And we hear about what theater you look forward to the most. Call in with a question. You can share at any point. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. So, Gwen, from mid-November until the end of December, Skylight Music Theater in Milwaukee is putting on the Tony-nominated Broadway musical School of Rock. And so how is the stage production different from the movie School of Rock?
Well, I love the movie. Mm-hmm. And Jack Black was amazing as the main character in School of Rock. And a lot of that joy and sort of craziness is definitely in the stage production as well. There's music by Andrew Lloyd Webber, who, you know, it's hard to argue with someone who's as accomplished as he is when it comes to Broadway scores. So, I mean, the music is fun. And, you know, I think really the main draw of this is that there are kids on stage and they are playing their own instruments and they are absolutely rocking out. And it is so much fun to watch that part. I mean, I tend to think that that the musicals based on movies have a hard time sort of being their own distinct, mm-hmm. you know, artistic thing, and some have been tremendous flops, sort of the recycling that medium. But and School of Rock, you know, flattens out the story a little bit. You know, it creates a few more, you know, bad guys and good guys. But in general, I think it holds up pretty well. And like I said, there's just nothing like seeing, you know, a little girl playing the bass guitar. and, you know, and finding her inner rock star. So,
oh, let's take a listen to You're in the Band. This is live at the 2016 Tony Awards.
Now grab a hold of your axe and try to butt out this rim.
When do School of Rock, the themes in School of Rock, do they hold up over the decades?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that it's difficult to present a protagonist who is basically sort of an irresponsible man-child. who is then manipulating a bunch of young people into getting what he wants. I think it's difficult to make that a truly sympathetic story. and I think, you know, I do think that maybe it hasn't aged all that well, which says nothing about the overall experience, which, I mean, if you could see me right now, I'm still grinning from listening to that song, because it is so lovely and so funny and so full of energy and life. So, you know, like a lot of musicals, sometimes you have to make allowances for the time that they were created and maybe a little bit different set of rules for the characters.
Okay. Yeah, we can do that. We can manage. Let's turn to murder mysteries category. Two being staged in Milwaukee. The first is The Mousetrap, written by Agatha Christie, produced by Next Act Theater. What should mystery lovers know about this production?
Well, The Mousetrap is kind of legendary in that it has been running more or less continuously in London since it premiered in the 1950s. So that's ridiculous, you know, on its own. I was reading up about the show last night, and actually it's transferring to Broadway next year. So that American theater goers can also get a little taste of sort of the original, the one and only, The Mousetrap. I mean, this is a great family outing for people who maybe, I don't want to say they're Grinches, but maybe they've had enough Christmas, you know, spectacle for the year. Maybe they already went to see, you know, Christmas on Ice or something, and they want something a little different where they can just, you know, sit back and enjoy a fun, silly mystery. And The Mousetrap is a classic. So you've got all of these strangers in a country house on a dark and stormy night, and one of them is a murderer. So,
I think you called it a clue game come to life.
Yes, it is basically a clue game come to life. So the whole time you can be speculating, you know, was it him in the drawing room with the candlestick? You know, it's just fun. And not too serious, and you know, the bad guy is revealed at the end, so there's some nice closure.
All the closure you need and more. So okay, so then Milwaukee Repertory Theater, they're putting on Dial M for Murder, a new adaptation. The cast includes American Players Theater alum Marcus Trushinsky. How entertaining do you expect this, you know, whodunit to be?
Well, I wasn't as familiar with this, but again, I did some reading last night. So this was a classic Alfred Hitchcock film. Mm-hmm. And before that, it was actually a stage play. So it's coming back to the stage. It also was from the 50s. And because of sort of cultural norms and expectations, particularly of gender stereotypes, I think this production is actually getting a really good reception because it updates some of those. And actually changes the gender of one of the characters. So you have a new take on one of the love stories. And according to the reviews that I read, Hatcher's production is also just a little bit more suspenseful, a little bit more, you know, just really digging into those tropes and playing them beautifully.
Mixing it up a bit.
Yeah. And this is really about a husband, a disgruntled husband, who wants to kill his wife. And so you know that from the beginning. So it's a little bit of an opposite of the whodunit. It's a will he get away with it? Because, of course, all of his machinations, some go wrong, some, you know, accidents happen, and people are constantly sort of shifting positions and changing their stories. So, but it's a relatively small cast and a great cast. So, yeah, I think this should also be kind of just a fun evening out for the family who maybe doesn't want to see if, you know, Scrooge sees the light at the end of the day, because they've already done that.
But it should
be a lot of fun.
We have Wisconsin playwright, theater critic Gwen Rice as our guide as we talk about the theater season unfolding in front of us this fall and holiday winter season. 800-642-1234. Call in with a question or comment. Gwen, in all the productions we talked about, are tickets generally available for upcoming shows?
Yes. I do not know of any of these productions that are sold out. That would be a wonderful problem for each of these theaters to have. So I would say, you know, make your plans, you know, plan to go out to dinner, or, you know, make it a day, make it an evening, and get your tickets. And then, you know, just have all of these things to look forward to as we approach the end of the year.
Okay. I want your hot take for a second, because recently here on our show, we talked to Rebecca Gilman, who wrote Swing State. Mm-hmm. That's a play set in the Driftless region. Play had an off-Broadway run. It got some traction, received positive reviews. Could you see Swing State being staged here in Wisconsin?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, Rebecca Gilman is an amazing playwright, and she has set several of her plays in Wisconsin. She used to be a theater professor at Northwestern, and so she had sort of a summer house up here in Wisconsin, and I think really fell in love with the state. And has, like, really thought deeply about some of the particular conundrums of Midwesterners, and, you know, how, like in Swing State, you know, how the state, the people can be so divided politically, but can still come together as a community around, you know, bigger issues. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely think that that would be a great show for a company like Forward Theater in Madison, or
if you're,
you know,
listening,
any of the professional theaters in Milwaukee, the Rep Chamber Theater, even Renaissance. You know, it's always interesting to see how Wisconsinites are portrayed on stage, and, you know, and we can all sort of nod our heads and say, yeah, she got that right, you know.
Oh, Gwen, this has been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. There's nothing I enjoy more than talking about the theater. So thanks so much for having me.
Gwen Rice is a professional writer and playwright, formerly of Madison. I'm Kate Archer Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.